Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Monday, April 29th, 2019. Coming up this hour.
New questions about Boeing's MAX jets as the company's annual meeting gets underway.
Management at Bayer faces shareholder rebellion as legal pressure grows.
And Anadarko leans toward endorsing Occidental's $38 billion takeover bid.
A new poll is good news for former Vice President Biden as he hits the campaign trail today. Plus the aftermath from a deadly weekend shooting at a California synagogue. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. The Islanders lost game 2 to Carolina, trailed the series 2-0. The Yankees with a sweep in San Francisco. The Mets beat Milwaukee.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and U.S. futures and European shares are starting the week on a positive note, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. We are coming up to 5:01 on Wall Street. Right now, S&P futures are up 2 points, Dow futures up 32, NASDAQ futures up 10. The DAX in Germany's down 0.1%, while the CAC in Paris and the FTSE 100 are both little change. No trading in Japan today or for the rest of the week, and the Hang Seng in Hong Kong is up 1%. 10-year Treasury down 2/32, the yield 2.50%, and NYMEX crude oil down 1% or 66 cents at 62.64. A barrel. Nathan.
Karen, what's a big day for Boeing? The company's annual shareholder meeting gets underway as the grounding of 737 MAX jets enters its seventh week. Bloomberg's Taylor Riggs reports.
Investors are looking for any updates from the management team after executives last week said they had no timetable for the return of the 737 MAX. The company also reported quarterly profit last week that missed estimates and suspended their 2019 guidance until further updates on the 737 MAX and its impact on their financials becomes available. I'm Taylor Riggs, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Taylor, thank you. And now the absence of a key safety alert on 737 MAX jets is raising more questions for Boeing. Bloomberg's Kyungyi Park has details.
The standard warning system that was in the previous 737 versions was not available on the 737 MAX. Actually, you had to pay for additional fee for that feature. And so since it was already a standard feature on the previous 737s, I think a lot of airlines expected that feature to be a standard on the MAX itself. And it seems like they only found out after the accident that it wasn't.
The alert, which warns about sensor malfunctions, was only available for a fee that includes a separate indicator display.
Management at Bayer is digging in against shareholder rebellion over its acquisition of Monsanto as the company faces more than 13,000 lawsuits alleging its Roundup weed killer causes cancer. Bloomberg's Christine Burke reports.
Bayer held its annual investor meeting on Friday, and shareholders took a vote of no confidence against CEO Werner Baumann. But then the supervisory board decided that they are still going to stand by CEO Werner Baumann. And so now over the weekend, sources have spoken to Bloomberg and said that there are many shareholders that are very frustrated. They now want to see an overhaul of the board and also want the company to take on a strategic review that would consider a possible breakup of the company.
That has shares of Bayer higher, actually, up more than 2% in Frankfurt.
As Anadarko Petroleum weighs takeover bids from Chevron and Occidental, the Financial Times says it's leaning towards Occidental's $38 billion offer. Bloomberg's Stuart Wallace has details.
It's coming down to something more than price. It's also about what is the synergy between the assets and, more importantly, what do the balance sheets look like? Because if you think, particularly in the case of Anadarko, it's got this mega LNG project in Mozambique, and that's going to require an enormous amount of financing. So it's not just about the bid, it's also about the health of the balance sheet of the parent company that ultimately is going to own that asset. Are they going to have the money and the access to funds to develop it?
Earlier this month, Chevron had agreed to acquire Anadarko for $33 billion, $5 billion less than Occidental's latest bid. If Anadarko goes with Occidental, Chevron has 4 days to come back with a counteroffer.
Turning to markets now, stocks in Asia started the week mixed, with trading in Japan closed for a holiday. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally joins us with the latest from Singapore. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. The Shanghai Composite continued to remain under pressure after last week's dismal performance. However, Hong Kong stocks listed in China fared well ahead of a slew of earnings from more than 60 companies worth some $2.6 trillion. The ASX 200 lost almost half of 1% in Sydney, snapping its four-day winning streak. Elsewhere, Australia's dollar rose on month-end demand from exporters, while trading in other currencies was muted as investors await multiple risk events this week. In Singapore, I'm Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Julia, thank you. The risk events include a Federal Reserve decision, the monthly U.S. jobs report, and another round of trade talks. Here with more on those negotiations is Bloomberg Daybreak Asia anchor Brian Curtis.
A Trump administration official says it's still possible these talks will fall apart, that President Trump could walk away if there's no progress. USTR Robert Lighthizer and Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin are due to begin talks in Beijing tomorrow with Chinese Vice Premier Liu He. Lately, negotiators have been pretty positive, so it's not clear if the comments today represent some new snag, or perhaps simply that the gap between the two sides still needs to narrow. In Hong Kong, I'm Brian Curtis, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thank you, Brian. In Europe, socialist Pedro Sanchez has won the most seats in Spain's election, but now faces challenges when it comes to forming a government. Bloomberg's Anne-Marie Hordern has the very latest from Madrid.
How does he form this majority? That's the next path forward. Really, two scenarios that can happen. One is that he forms an alliance with Ciudadanos. The problem with this is their leader has campaigned on the fact that they would not do a deal with Sanchez. The second route he can take in terms of a coalition is with Podemos and some other smaller parties, and that would mean reaching out to Catalonian nationalists. That would be a bit of a hodgepodge coalition, but the numbers there would work.
An alliance with the Catalan separatists makes more political sense, but a coalition with the liberal Ciudadanos makes for easier math. Stocks in Spain are down 0.5% following the vote.
And here in the U.S., shares of Disney are up 1.5% in early trading. Its film Avengers Endgame set a box office record, taking in $1.2 billion worldwide over the weekend. Right now, the euro is at 1.1163 against the dollar, the yen at 111.74, and COMEX gold is down about 0.3% on $4.80 at $1,284 an ounce. And NYMEX crude oil is down 1.1%. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
Hey, thanks, Karen. It's 5:07 on Wall Street, and Michael Barr is here to tell us more of what's happening around the world as we begin this new week. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. Former Vice President Joe Biden leads Senator Bernie Sanders by 17% to 11% among Democratic and Democratic-leaning independent voters. That's according to an ABC News Washington Post poll of more than 1,000 adults with a 3.5% margin of error. Other prominent Democrats like Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer of New York are holding off on making a choice.
I'd like to see the candidate who has the best chance of beating Donald Trump win, and the primary voters will determine that.
Meanwhile, Biden will make his first campaign stop today with a rally in Pittsburgh. Authorities say the 19-year-old man accused of opening fire on Sabbath worshipers in a deadly shooting rampage at a synagogue near San Diego is believed to have acted alone without help from any organized group. Police say the suspected gunman, John Ernest, walked into the synagogue Saturday, the last day of Passover, killed one woman and wounded three other people inside using an assault-style rifle. Rabbi Yisro Goldstein, who was injured in the attack, spoke at a rally in Poway, California last night.
God spared me, and it made me think about this. Every single one of us, when we go to sleep at night and we wake up the next morning, ask the same question I asked myself. Why am I alive? Why did I survive this?
60-year-old Lori Gilbert Kay was also shot. She did not survive. Stephen Moore, President Trump's choice for a seat on the Federal Reserve Board, vows to survive a smear campaign against him. Moore, a former Trump campaign advisor, told ABC's This Week some of his articles from his days as a columnist was an obvious failed attempt at humor. Critics say it was demeaning to women. Some of Moore's articles were written close to 20 years ago, but a more recent article in 2014 was brought up where he said closing the gender wage gap could prove harmful to the stability of the American family.
This is the best labor market for workers in your and my lifetime. I mean, look, I'm not going to apologize for that. I think it's a fantastic thing. I just want the, when it comes to wages and, you know, gender equity, I want that to be decided by the market. I don't want government to intervene in those kinds of things.
ABC's This Week can be heard Sundays right here on Bloomberg Radio. Former Indiana Senator Richard Lugar has died at age 87. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries, I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. 5:09 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's John Stashower.
Nathan, the Islanders have gotten where they are by being the NHL's best defensive team. They give up the fewest goals this season, but you got to score also. And in two games versus Carolina, they've only scored once. And that actually was put in the net by a Carolina player in the first period yesterday. The Hurricanes scored goals 48 seconds apart early in the third period. They won game two in Brooklyn 2-1, and they lead Barry Trotz's Islanders 2-0.
Well, that's the cruel reality sometimes, is that you play really well and you don't get the result. But it's about the state of the process, and we've been doing that all year. Play our game, play it hard, and give everything you have. And I don't think I can say that we didn't give, you know, everything we have. We just didn't get the result.
Game three is Wednesday in Raleigh. The other three series in the Stanley Cup playoffs are all tied at one. Colorado won 4-3 at San Jose. A wild finish to the much-anticipated NBA series between Houston and Golden State. The Warriors held on to win 104-100. Kevin Durant scored 31. Boston won game one with surprising ease at top-seeded Milwaukee. What a road trip this has been for the Yankees, and it's not over. Two games at Arizona starting tomorrow. They completed the sweep in San Francisco 11-5. Two-run homers for Gary Sanchez and Gleyber Torres. Domingo Germán now 5-1, and the Yanks are 6-1 on the trip. They've won 11 of 13. Despite having 13 players on the injured list. Mets salvaged one from Milwaukee. They were up 2-0. The Brewers tied it on a two-run homer by Mike Moustakas off Steven Matz, but the Mets pulled it out 5-3, and Matz improved to 3-1 on the season. For the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Nathan.
And John, Credit Technology with a big assist in Manchester City's pursuit of a Premier League title. The soccer team beat Burnley 1-0. Thanks to a score that needed confirmation from goal line technology. After a review, it was determined the distance of the goal over the line was less than 1.2 inches. So it's not just American football that's a game of inches. S&P futures up 2.5 points. Dow futures up 36. NASDAQ futures up 11. This is Bloomberg. And it's coming up to 5:12 on Wall Street. Straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak, we speak with Morgan Stanley cross-asset strategist Andrew Sheets ahead of another busy week for earnings and the Federal Reserve's next rate decision. Stay with us. This is Bloomberg.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Stocks in Europe are lower while U.S. stock index futures are higher in a week that's packed with data releases that'll provide clues on global economic growth. Oil is falling and treasury yields are ticking higher. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 1.5 points. Dow futures up 28. NASDAQ futures up 8. The DAX in Germany is down about 0.2%. 10-year Treasury down 2/32, yield 2.50%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.28%. NYMEX crude oil is down 1% or 66 cents to $62.65 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.3% or $3.90 to $12.85 an ounce. The euro is at 1.1166 against the dollar, the yen 111.72. Shares of Disney are moving this morning up 1.8% in early trading, and Avengers Endgame set a box office record, taking in $1.2 billion worldwide this weekend. And we're also watching for reports on personal income and spending. They're at 8:30 a.m. Wall Street time. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. Joe Biden is set to give his first campaign speech of the 2020 presidential race in Pennsylvania, signaling that he hopes to own what may be the election's toughest battleground. The former vice president is scheduled to speak to an organized labor crowd this afternoon in Pittsburgh. A vigil was held yesterday after a Saturday shooting at a synagogue near San Diego. Authorities have arrested a 19-year-old man in the shooting that left one woman dead.
In the NHL playoffs, the Hurricanes have a 2-game-to-zip lead over the Islanders. Carolina beat New York 2-1 Sunday. In the NBA playoffs, the Celtics won their opener against the Bucks. In the East semifinals, the Warriors won Game 1 of their Western semis against the Rockets. In baseball, the Yankees downed the Giants 11-5. The Mets won along with the Nationals. The Red Sox lost along with the Orioles and A's. Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. It's 519 on Wall Street. Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak. And we're joined on this Monday morning by Andrew Sheets, cross-asset strategist at Morgan Stanley. I think the question for many investors, Andrew, is when we'll see an end game for this equity rally. It doesn't seem like we're there yet. The S&P continues on a record high and still moving up in the futures contracts this morning.
Well, it certainly has been an impressive run. I mean, clearly, you know, we're coming off of the best, one of the best first quarters in market history, and momentum has continued. And so I think what markets are going to be looking at is I think a couple of things. First, we do have an important FOMC meeting this Wednesday. A huge component of this rally has been the fact that markets have continued to press higher and risk premiums have compressed, even as the Fed has gotten incrementally more dovish as that has gone on. That's an unusual combination, and so I think this Wednesday will be an important marker for that. And also, right, we are also heading into what is seasonally a somewhat more difficult time for the markets, right? We're going to move past the catalyst of earnings season. We're moving into May, June, July, and that might give also people some pause. But I do think that Fed policy is going to be important here. The market is obviously, I think, counting on the Fed to continue with the dovish message.
Yeah, where do you see the Fed moving, particularly coming off a first quarter where we saw GDP surprise with that 3.2% number?
It was a very impressive number, but I think digging a little bit deeper into the details, we don't think that type of growth is going to be sustained. There was a large contribution from inventories that we think needs to be given back. There was a large contribution from net exports, which we think also will ultimately be given back. And so, you know, Morgan Stanley's forecast for second quarter GDP is only 1.1, all the way down from that 3.2 in the first quarter. So we think that deceleration will be more of the tone for the rest of the year, that U.S. growth will moderate, and that will be the reason that the Fed ultimately remains on hold over the course of the year, justified by that decelerating growth profile.
So you're not seeing the Fed coming in with a rate cut this year then?
We're not, and I think there are a couple of reasons that you know, we are somewhat skeptical of that, you know, 95-96 playbook, even though I think some good points and some good similarities are made there. But I think, you know, importantly, I think important differences between that mid-cycle rate cut and today were, you know, unemployment is much, much lower today than it was back then. You know, in 94, the Fed took rates up by 300 basis points in a year, so they arguably over-tightened a lot, and there was a lot to give back where we don't have the similar situation today. And, right, you know, we are at today sitting, you know, 10 years into one of the longest expansions in U.S. history. You know, back during the during the 95-96 mid-cycle rate cut, you were very early in a long expansion. So I think there's enough different, and I think stock prices are higher, financial stability concerns are high enough where we don't think the Fed would cut rates.
And in the midst of this market environment, we're seeing volatility near year lows. Where should investors be betting in terms of volatility now?
Well, I think it's always, you know, it's always hard to cite a specific catalyst for volatility, you know, especially when, you know, the first quarter growth environment was fine and the earnings season has so far been fine. But, you know, I would focus on two aspects with volatility. You know, the first is that, you know, I do think you have a number of interesting growth stories in motion, right? We think U.S. growth will decelerate from 3% in the first quarter to around 1% in the second quarter, while growth in China, you know, looks a lot better over the rest of the year. So those diverging growth stories, I think, could drive a bit of volatility in the macro markets. And the other thing that I find quite interesting is I think investors, to your previous question, have gotten a little bit more optimistic around an even more dovish Fed. This idea maybe we'll get a mid-cycle rate cut to further boost things. Well, you know, historically when that's happened, volatility has gone up. That's been a volatility increasing event because it's driven more more excitement and more exuberance. And so I think, you know, you could get to, I think, somewhat higher volatility in markets from a couple of different directions.
And just quickly, given where we are in the cycle, what sectors look best to you? Where are you overweight at this point?
Well, so we're running a little bit of a barbell. I think financials are a sector here where we're overweight, and we think that the market is a little bit too pessimistic. You know, we think U.S. banks have shown a pretty reasonable performance in first quarter earnings. We think if underlying growth is stable, then that's good enough for what's expected. And they've performed, I think, a little bit better than the market gives them credit for in late cycle environments. And so I think a sector like that where, you know, multiples are still kind of near the low end of the historical range, you know, being more favorable towards something like that and being less favorable to something like U.S.
Gotta leave it there. Thank you so much. Morgan Stanley Cross Asset Strategist Andrew Sheets. And Bloomberg Daybreak at 525 on Wall Street is brought to you by National Realty, NRIA, developers of high-return income-producing properties for investor partners. See them at NRIA.net.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And it's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Karen Moscow.
And I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by BNY Mellon's Pershing. Experience Insight, the essential event for the financial advice community. Visit BNYMellonInsight.com to learn more and register today.
And we're just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures are higher to begin the trading week. Last week, the S&P 500 and NASDAQ closed at record highs. Markets in Japan are closed for the week, while stocks in Europe are lower.
So is crude. After President Trump renewed his push for lower prices, and Russia said it would restore normal oil flows to Eastern Europe within 2 weeks. Checking prices now, West Texas Intermediate's down 1.3% to $62.48 a barrel, while Brent is down 1.4% at $71.11 a barrel.
Boeing holds a highly anticipated shareholder meeting following the grounding of its 737 MAX jets. Bloomberg's Christine Burke has more.
Surely investors are going to be asking a lot of tough questions to CEO Dennis Muilenburg. And we're expecting to see protesters outside of the gathering. So that always makes for a bit more drama, if you will.
And meanwhile, Southwest Airlines says it heard from Boeing just after the Lion Air crash in October. The company told Southwest an alert warning pilots of a sensor malfunction linked to the crash was not a standard feature. Boeing said the warning only worked if airlines bought an extra piece of equipment.
The latest round of tech earnings continues today with results from Alphabet. The company reports after the close of U.S. trading, and Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger has a preview.
The parent of Google has been investing heavily in cloud and infrastructure, and Bloomberg Intelligence says that likely weighed on the company's margins. That could mask robust growth in advertising as the number of paid clicks rises on mobile ad demand. Currency headwinds and tougher year-over-year comparisons could be with Alphabet through the first half. Jeff Bellinger, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Jeff, thanks. The Financial Times is reporting Anadarko is preparing to endorse Occidental's $38 billion takeover offer. The move threatens to derail a previously agreed deal with Chevron.
And shares of Disney are up more than 1% in early trading. Its film Avengers Endgame set a box office record by taking in $1.2 billion worldwide this weekend. Now let's get you up to date on how stocks are faring. S&P futures are little changed now. Dow futures up 9. NASDAQ futures up about 2. 10-year Treasury down 2/32. Yield 2.50%. Yield on the 2-year 2.28%. NYMEX crude oil is down 1.1% or 73 cents at $62.58 a barrel. And straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
Thank you, Karen. It's 5:33 on Wall Street, and Michael Barr has more on what's happening around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Nathan. Former Vice President Joe Biden is set to hold his first campaign rally in Pittsburgh today. Biden sits atop a new national ABC News Washington Post poll for the Democratic presidential nomination. 17% of Democrats and Democratic-leaning independents back him. On ABC's This Week, Democratic Congressman Jim Clyburn says while he's not backing anyone yet, Biden's presence brings a new dimension to the race.
At this point in time, Joe Biden is probably the leader. The question is whether or not he can maintain that lead.
ABC's This Week can be heard Sundays on Bloomberg Radio. President Trump called to express his condolences to the rabbi who survived the deadly shooting at a synagogue near San Diego. Investigators from the San Diego County Sheriff's Department and the FBI say they believe the suspected shooter, 19-year-old John Ernest, acted alone. Attorney General William Barr's appearance before the House Judiciary Committee this week is in doubt. Bloomberg's Ed Maxer has the story.
The Justice Department has balked at the panel's plans to have counsel from both sides question the Attorney General after the traditional round of questioning by members. Remember, this happened in the Justice Kavanaugh hearings in the Senate, though. The Senate will use the traditional rules, and Democratic Senator Amy Klobuchar on NBC says his appearance in both houses is very important.
Evidence of him being told to fire the special counsel, to me, this looks like obstruction of justice, which is exactly what Barr had told me in those questions. So I view this as an opportunity to really push him on what obstruction of justice is.
The Senate appearance is scheduled for Wednesday, the House Thursday. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
In Spain, socialist Pedro Sanchez has won the most seats in yesterday's election, but now faces challenges when it comes to forming a government. Bloomberg's Charles Pinty reports from Madrid.
Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez had a good election night, with his socialist party winning 123 seats. That's not enough to govern, though. He still needs to craft political alliances to reach the 176 seats that would give him a majority. Podemos, a party to the left of the socialists, looks like an obvious partner, as do the Basque nationalists. But that might not be enough to take him over the line, leaving him to forge partnerships with other smaller groups and perhaps having to rely on Catalan separatist parties to be able to govern. In Madrid, Charles Penty, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thank you, Michael. 5:35 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update with John Stashower.
Nathan, the Islanders began the playoffs with four straight wins over Pittsburgh. They won the home games at their old home, the Nassau Coliseum. Second round, two home losses to Carolina. Those games played at their new home in Brooklyn. Hurricanes took the opener, 1-0 overtime, and yesterday, game two at Barclays, 2-1. The series shifts to Raleigh Wednesday. Colorado won 4-3 at San Jose. That's tied at one. Houston Rockets season ended a year ago with a game seven loss to Golden State. Start of the rematch, same result. Warriors won 104-100. The Rockets were furious with non-foul calls down the stretch. Afterwards, Houston coach Mike D'Antoni didn't want to criticize the refs and get fined.
I'm going to really try to be a nice guy, you know, because I really don't want to give the charity to them. I'd rather have my charity and have the money. So, I mean, the response was they just came at halftime and said they missed it. That's what they told me. So, they missed four of them. That's 12 foul shots. So be it. I mean, they're trying to do the best they can do. And obviously, it was what it was.
Boston won 112-90 at Milwaukee. The Yankees with a sweep in San Francisco. They won 11-5. Luke Voit, three hits, scored two runs, and drove in two-run homers for Gleyber Torres and Gary Sanchez. Domingo Herman got the win, and the Yankees are 6-1 on this trip. They've won 11 of 13. Mets beat the Brewers 5-2. Steven Matt, since that nightmare start in Philadelphia when he gave up eight runs and didn't retire a batter, has won twice. He has allowed only three runs in 13 innings. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, John Stashower. Nathan?
All right, John, thank you. It's 5:37 on Wall Street. The latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week is on newsstands now with the cover on how Generation Z is changing the consumer landscape. Also in this week's issue, why Clorox and Unilever want the bacteria business to thrive.
These bacteria, they're called ammonia oxidizing bacteria, or AOBs, and they take the ammonia in your sweat and they transform it into nitrite, which is anti-infective, and nitric oxide, which is a molecule that's good for all sorts of health effects.
It's Bloomberg Business Week's Carolina Winter. You can read her story and others in this week's edition of Bloomberg Business Week. Know what matters and why? Visit businessweek.com or pick up a copy of the magazine on newsstands now. And listen to Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly, weekdays at 2 p.m. Wall Street time, right here on Bloomberg Radio. 5:38 on Wall Street, time for the Tri-State Business Report with Bloomberg's Ed Corey. Good morning, Ed.
Morning, Nathan. Governor Phil Murphy has named Kevin Quinn, a 20-year veteran of Goldman Sachs, as head of New Jersey's embattled Economic Development Authority. He's the partner and founder of Short Hills-based Genkey Advisory, a consulting and investment services firm. Repairs on the L train tunnel are underway, but the New York Post says the embattled MTA still hasn't detailed its agreement with contractors or a final price tag, which could be worth $500 million. The tunnel was damaged by Sandy's floodwaters, endangering the key link between Manhattan's 14th Street and North Brooklyn neighborhoods. Younger Americans are moving to New Haven, Milford, Connecticut, also to Madison, Wisconsin, according to the National Association of Realtors. Those places saw the biggest share of arrivals among millennials. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey. Nathan?
Thank you, Ed. It is 5:39 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Steve Potusk, and on KMOX in St. Louis, we're talking about Bayer digging in against a shareholder revolt over the Monsanto takeover.
I'm Andrew O'Day on 1010 Winds in New York. I'm reporting on Walmart unveiling its push into TV show production in New York this week.
I'm Anna Edwards. On Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London, we're following news that 22 Labour candidates in the European elections are pledging to campaign for the UK to stay in the EU.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and for WBBM in Chicago, Boeing gears up for its annual meeting as it works to regain the public trust following two deadly crashes of its 737 MAX jet.
I'm Ed Corey. On KFBK in Sacramento, I'm reporting Apple has hired Intel's smartphone chief.
And those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. President Trump's pick for a seat on the Federal Reserve Board is vowing to survive what he calls a smear campaign. Still, Stephen Moore is telling ABC News he would withdraw from consideration if he becomes a liability. Moore has come under fire for past writings criticizing cities and states in the Midwest and also for ridiculing women in some of his past writing. Futures starting to point lower now with S&P futures down a point, Dow futures down six, NASDAQ futures down a point. 10-year Treasury yield 2.50%, the 2-year at 2.28%. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by Command Financial. Business is constantly evolving. Is your financial printer staying ahead of the curve? Learn how Command Financial is evolving not only with the times, but with your business requirements. Visit commandfinancial.com today.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and stocks in Europe are lower, while U.S. stock index futures are now little changed. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are, again, now little changed, down less than a point. Dow futures up three, NASDAQ futures down two. The DAX in Germany is down a third of a percent. 10-year Treasury down 2/32, yield 2.50%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.28%. NYMEX crude oil down 1% on 61 cents to $62.69 a barrel. COMEX gold is down a third of a percent on $4.50 to $12.84.30 an ounce. The euro is at 1.1160 against the dollar. The yen 111.71. Watching shares of Walt Disney up 1.7% in early trading. Avengers Endgame set a box office record, taking in $1.2 billion worldwide this weekend. And Alphabet, the parent company of Google, is among companies scheduled to report earnings today. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, former Vice President Joe Biden holds his first 2020 presidential campaign rally in Pittsburgh this afternoon. Investigations are underway today into the background of the suspected gunman accused of opening fire inside of a San Diego County synagogue over the weekend, killing a woman and injuring three others. In the NHL playoffs, the Hurricanes have a 2-game-to-zip lead over the Islanders. Carolina beat New York 2-1 Sunday. NBA playoffs, the Celtics won their opener against the Bucks. The Warriors won game one of their Western semis against the Rockets. In baseball, the Yankees downed the Giants. The Mets won along with the Nationals. The Red Sox lost along with the Orioles and A's. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thank you, Michael. We are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, where it's coming up to 5:49 on Wall Street. It's been a little more than 9 months since the death of Sergio Marchionne. The Fiat Chrysler CEO's passing was sudden. It was also shrouded in secrecy. And now we're learning more about the risks Fiat Chrysler faced in the moments before Marchionne's untimely demise and the crisis it confronted in the days that followed. Here with the story, Bloomberg's Janet Wu.
To understand the legacy of Sergio Marchionne, you need to understand just how important he was to Fiat Chrysler. This is a man who was a legend in the auto industry and credited with saving both Fiat and Chrysler brands. And now, almost a year later, we still don't know what caused his death.
One of the auto industry's biggest names, Sergio Marchionne, died this morning.
Sergio Marchionne, the chief executive of Fiat Chrysler, has passed away.
Sergio Marchionne will long be remembered as a tough, incredible...
He was a titan in the auto industry. In the moments after his passing, the CEOs of Volkswagen, General Motors, and his successor at Fiat Chrysler heaped praise on the self-described workaholic.
I knew him as really one of the characters of the industry. He made a difference. He was very unconventional. He had a new approach, a new focus in the industry, so we will miss him.
Our thoughts are with Sergio Marchionne's family and friends, as well as the entire FCA team. I think we all agree Sergio will be remembered for the many, many accomplishments he had in our industry.
Personally, having spent the last 9 years of my life seeing or talking to Sergio almost on a daily basis, this morning's news is heartbreaking, and I know that it will also be heartbreaking for many other people. There is no doubt that Sergio was a very special, unique man, and there is no doubt that he's going to be sorely missed.
Marchionne was notorious for working all hours of the day, running his empire from several mobile phones, sending out daily orders via WhatsApp. He was truly obsessed with his job. Matt Miller has covered the global auto industry for more than 15 years and interviewed Marchionne many times.
He absolutely loved what he did. He was a person who worked 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year. He was constantly either on the phone or talking with colleagues, talking with reporters, talking with customers, talking with employees.
Tommaso Ebhardt witnessed many of those conversations. Tommaso is our Milan bureau chief and covered Marchionne for more than a decade, chasing the charismatic leader around the world as he transformed Italy's biggest car brand. Tommaso literally wrote the book on Sergio Marchionne.
He was essentially driven by one obsession, which was making a difference every single day. And this obsession he carried on until the end, even if he was seriously sick and he didn't tell anyone that.
When he quietly went into surgery in late June, only his closest family members were aware. Even the chairman of Fiat Chrysler was left in the dark.
No one outside his family knew he was sick, and this includes John Elkann, the chairman of Fiat, who essentially discovered that Marchionne was never going to come back at work once he went for the second time at the Zurich hospital where Marchionne was hospitalized. The first time, he was not allowed to get into the intensive care unit for privacy reasons by the doctor. The second time, when he got into the hospital and met Marchionne's partner, he understood immediately that Marchionne was never going to come back.
By all accounts, it was a curious circumstance, shrouded in secrecy. And it stayed that way until Tommaso broke the news that Fiat was replacing Marchionne as CEO.
I was on a remote Greek island at the beginning of July when I started to get call from my usual sources asking why Sergio Marchionne was so unusually silent. There was a real mystery around Sergio Marchionne in the last few weeks until at midnight of Friday, 20th July, I finally got firm from my sources that Marchionne was going to be replaced as CEO of Fiat Chrysler the following day. And essentially we broke that news during the night.
And many details still remain a secret today, including the exact nature of his passing. But for Chairman John Elkann, the revelation that Marchionne was never coming back to Fiat Chrysler sparked a corporate crisis. This is a company that told investors in its annual report just 1 year earlier that Marchionne was, and this is a quote, critical to the execution of its strategy. Remember, this was a company that saw its value grow tenfold under his leadership. Still, though, Marchionne had plans to retire the following year. He spoke with Tommaso in April, his final interview before he was hospitalized.
I think it's time for change. You know, it's all these transitions as cycles. We're all getting to the point where we've put in 10, 15 years worth of a life as a CEO, and I think it's time to pass the baton to somebody else.
As put many investors, they see your departure as a moment of weakness for the organization.
No. Actually, it should be taken as a moment of strength. You know, these renewals, right, are healthy. You know, one of the great things about SCA is that, you know, we've got this gym, right? In not a nice gym, it smells all the time. People wear socks. They're tired all the time. We do produce good leaders. And I think these leaders need to have a chance to run. They're younger than me. I think they've all, it's a great business school, right? It may not be perfect, but it's a great business school. I think these kids need the space. Let them run.
Now it was up to Fiat Chairman John Elkann to make this crucial decision on his own to find the man who would replace Marchionne. That decision came following an emergency meeting where Elkann nominated the current head of the Jeep brand, Mike Manley, to take over Fiat. The selection became official just 4 days before Marchionne's death. In the time since, Fiat Chrysler has lost more than 10% of its value. Manley's first official announcement as CEO didn't help. A few hours after Marchionne's death was announced, he cut profit targets for the year. Though he tried to assure investors that Fiat would carry on with plans laid out by Marchionne, shares plunged more than 15% that day.
Fundamentally, my mandate is to deliver that five-year plan. We have all of the resources that we need over the period, and my intention is to deliver the plan as a strong, independent FCA.
6 months later, the stock took another hit when Manley provided investors with a weak outlook for 2019. Fiat and other automakers are facing a tough environment as the industry confronts a global slowdown in sales. Jeff Windau is an auto analyst at Edward Jones.
Auto shares and auto sales moderating over the last few years. We think that's going to continue. We think the growth is going to be moderating over the next few years. And so we're just more cautious looking at the names and think shares are really fully valued with our growth expectations at this point.
Fiat now has to navigate a trade war between the U.S. and China, stricter emission rules in Europe, and the threat, or promise, depending how you look at it, of technology playing a greater role than ever in the industry. The next auto revolution appears to be underway, and while Fiat Chrysler has as good a chance as any to come out on top, it will have to do so without Sergio Marchionne. I'm Janet Wu, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Janet, thank you. And futures this morning, they are a little change. We continue to watch shares of Walt Disney this morning as well. They're up 1.6%. This is after Avengers Endgame set a box office record. NYMEX crude oil is falling this morning. It's down 0.7% or 47 cents at $62.84 a barrel. And COMEX gold down 0.3%, down $4.50 at $12.84.30 an ounce. The euro at 1.1161 against the dollar. The yen is at 111.72. And taking a look at the British pound this morning at 1.2938 against the dollar. And Bloomberg Daybreak continues. Our top stories, a check of the markets, all straight ahead. This is Bloomberg.